And as I was saying, we just jobbed around, took what work we could find. And in the meantime, I knew that Golda was returning right away and that I had to get prepared for a temple marriage. So I was working in the ward, still doing my clerk work in the mutual and in the Sunday school, and was quite active. I'd been advanced to an elder and then to a 70. So I was active in those quorums, and everything was going well except money. But anyway, the time of Golda's release came, and she returned by train, and instead of going right straight home, she stopped over in Soda Springs, and I was so thrilled to meet the train there in Soda Springs just a day or two before Christmas. And I took her out home to Conda, and she spent Christmas with us. Then right after Christmas, I took her to town. She got on the train and went to Burley, I guess it was. Her folks were to meet her in Burley. And I was still struggling along with financial problems. And so it was, the depression was still on. There was no work going on at Conda yet, only for the married men. And they were working part-time. But anyway, I worked for Chris Panning on his ranch. And by July, I had made enough money to buy a license to get married. And so, of course, before this time, Golda, I'd been back and forth to Elba to see Golda, and she'd come up here and stayed with us on the ranch a little bit, and then she'd gone back to Elba. And so about the 26th of July, after we got the hay up, I got in my car and I drove over to Elba. And there she kind of played a little trick on me. She made me ask her father for her hand in marriage. It was quite a lot of fun. And the day of the 27th, Golda and I got in the car. Oh yes, by this time I had a swanky car. It was a Durant. In fact, I'd bought the Durant the fall that Golda came back to visit me in 29. And so I had this nice looking Durant car. And so anyway, on the 27th, we got in the car and we drove to Logan. And we stayed in Logan overnight. And then early in the morning of the 28th, we went to the temple and were united in marriage. And I was about the happiest fellow, I believe, in the world at that time, to have Golda for my very own. And after we got out of the temple, must have been 1 or 2 o'clock, we went and had some dinner. Then we got in the car and we drove to Salt Lake. And we stayed in Salt Lake that night with Golda's cousin and her husband. And then the next day we went on to Provo. And then we took a tour of the Timpanogos Cave. Oh, we had a big honeymoon. We had lots of fun. We didn't spend much money because we didn't have the money to spend. But anyway, we had a lot of fun, and then we returned to the ranch and continued our work with Chris. And then that fall, we went up to and helped Russell Panning with his harvest. And then that winter, we got a job working for A.J. Nolan. They were an elderly couple, and they had a ranch out east of Soda Springs. He was a sheep man. And we went there in the fall. We helped him finish up his harvest. And then we took a job for the winter feeding the sheep for $30 a month and our board and room. That was a wonderful, wonderful winter we spent there with that elderly couple. They were very educated and informative, and we enjoyed our stay there with them. And during the harvest, Golda had been on the payroll too, cooking for the harvest men. And during the winter, we took this job for $30 a month to feed his sheep. And we had a very enjoyable time and a wonderful honeymoon. I'll back up there just a little bit to tell you about the first night that we spent in Provo. We stayed with my sister Orlin and her husband Iliff. Of course, they had a lot of fun. They had rigged up our bed and had all sorts of gimmicks in it. And we took them all in stride. We could tell that they were just outside the door with their ears to the door, and so we were quite smug about it. We just kept quiet and didn't make any fuss about it. And so we had a good laugh about it the next morning. And you know, your Grandma Golda, she's quite a prankster herself. I used to buy little gifts for her after we were married for special days like her birthday and Christmas and old Mother's Day and such things as that. I used to sneak them into the house and hide them so that she wouldn't find them before the time came. You know, she'd be wise to me, and she'd search around until she found that gift. And then she'd hide it from me. And then she'd have a lot of fun when I'd go to get that gift. I couldn't find it. And finally she'd bring it out, and then I'd present it to her. Another time I well remember Eula come up for a visit, and they were making a lemon pie or a meringue pie of some kind. Anyway, it looked delicious. I'd been teasing them and tormenting them all the time, so after dinner, they went to cut the pie, and there was one little speck of the crust that was burned just a little bit, and so they cut me off a teeny little wedge that took in this burnt part of this crust, and they gave that to me. And they cut themselves a great big piece of pie and sat there and ate it right before me. Boy, that was tempting, but I didn't know what I could do about it, because there was two of them and only one of me, and I had been teasing them, and so this was the way they got it back on me. But later on, they come out and gave me a great big piece of pie, so everything was fine. Well, time marches on. Golda and I worked for A.J. Nolan that winter, and then we worked for him the next spring during the shearing season. And we lived out on the Nolan Ranch out on Blackfoot River, and we had an enjoyable summer with him out there. And Then as fall approached, we were expecting a little baby. And we were all excited about that. We didn't know just what we were going to do. But it so happened that Conda opened up again that fall. And I got my job back at Conda. And so Golda and I think it was October before we got moved in and settled. And our bouncing baby boy came to us on the 5th day of November. We named him David DeLoss. We were really proud parents. We didn't have a great deal to offer him, only love. We'd moved into Conda and into our home in Conda, and it was quite a spacious place to us, and especially when we could only afford the bare necessities to start housekeeping. We had a cook stove, and we did get us a nice bedroom set, and in the front room we had a linoleum rug, and we had one of these old spring cots. We turned one side of it up against the wall, and Golda fixed it up with blankets, made a nice covering for it. And boy, we were just so happy and proud in our little humble furnishings. And the one thing that made it beautiful was that we had some of the family living there in Conda to visit with, and we had a lot of friends in Conda. So it was really a happy and wonderful fall when we moved back to Conda and we got our precious little boy. Time swiftly passes by. My first job when I went back to Conda that fall was to tram ore up on the 300 level of 116 South Drift. The fellows were all lots of fun to work with. We used to play lots of jokes and tricks on one another, have a lot of fun with our work. And then they made me a ward clerk under Bishop Hyde. And so I was getting busy back in the church and enjoyed that a lot. And then I got to be helper on the big motor. And you know, in the mine, the fellow that helps the number one miner with these drilling machines, he's called the chuck tender. So when I went onto the motor, I was the helper to Clyde Gill, and all the fellows used to call me chuck tender on the motor. And my work at Conda was always pleasant. There were always a good bunch of fellows to work with, and we had lots of fun with each other, playing tricks. And after lunch, Clyde and I would gather up all the lunch pails and take them outside with the first train of ore we took out, and we'd line them all up on a counter that they had there to hold the lunch pails. The fellows had quite a lot of fun in those days, seeing who could be the first one out of the car when they come off shift and grab up their lunch pail and see who could get to the head of the stairs first. Of course, when you got down to the boardwalk, it was narrow, and the one that was in the lead, he'd keep the lead because the others couldn't pass him, and it was always a great race to get down to the time shack and make out the time cards. So So Clyde and I would watch, and if there was one fellow that was out running, the others, quite a lot of the time, getting there first, why, once in a while, we'd pull a little trick on him. We'd tie his lunch pail down to the counter so that if he was the first out there and grab his lunch pail up, why, he couldn't get away with it. And once or twice, there was one or two of them in a big hurry, and they'd grab up their lunch pail and go off with it, and it was stuck to the counter and they couldn't get it off, and they'd sometimes pull the handle right off the lunch pail, try to get on their way. Took them quite a while to find out who was pulling that little trick, but eventually they found out, and then of course they'd find ways and means to get it back on us, and they did. They pulled a lot of jokes on me and got even with me a lot of times in that respect. Finally, I got back in the mill, went to work there. That's where I really enjoyed working most anyway. That's where I'd worked previous to the big layoff. But when I went back, why, they were just sort of on half scale, and they kept the older timers in the mill, and I went in the mine and on the motor for a spell, but finally I got back in the mill, and we used to have lots of fun in the mill. There were lots of young fellows living in Conda, and they were just getting married and starting up housekeeping, and once in a while some of those young fellows would be assigned to work in the mill. So us old mill hands, we'd watch, and when there would be a newlywed come to work at the mill, we'd get his lunch pail and take his sandwiches out of him and set them over on the furnace and kind of let him get good and brown, at least hardened and dried out. Then we'd put him back in his lunch pail, and when it would come noon, we'd all sit around there together eating our lunch, and this newlywed would open up his lunch pail and start nibbling on his sandwich, and it would be hard and dry, or else burned a little. We could just tell what he was thinking about his wife. She wasn't a very good cook or a very good lunch maker. He'd go home that night. He'd be afraid to tell his wife about it because he was just newly wedded. So he'd come back the next day and we'd do the same thing. Finally, they'd get wise. We sure had a lot of fun doing that sort of thing. How was that? Nice! I've worked all sorts of shifts, split shifts and straight shifts and night shifts and day shifts. And there for a while in the mill, the main shift had gone at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That is, there was a day shift and then a 4 o'clock shift. And at that time they were trying to run the pulverizer a little longer than the rest of the mill because they had demand for this pulverized rock. So I had to come out at 6:30 in the evening, and then after the main shift went off, I'd stay there by myself and run the pulverizer for 2.5 hours, give it a little extra time. It was only a one-man job. So one evening, there was a newlywed kid, just got married. Oh, he'd been married a couple of months, I guess. But his wife was the cutest little gal, and he was quite proud of her. He was sort of a jealous-natured guy. And he was quite jealous about this little wife of his. If he saw her talking to anybody else, why, that bothered him quite a lot. And so one evening, when I come on shift at 6:30, this kid's name was Irv, and he was up on the gates, and I saw him up there, and so I walked up and I said, "My land's Irv, I'm surprised to see you at work." I said, "Didn't I see you and your wife driving out of camp here about an hour ago?" And he said, "No, it wasn't me, I've been here since 4 o'clock." And I said, "Well, I'd have sworn it was you and your wife. In fact, I know it was your wife, because she was sitting on the side of the car next to me on the street there, and I know it was your wife, and I just supposed it was you." And I walked off and went on with business, and that was bothering Irv. You could just see it. He was getting more nervous and all the time, and finally, after about an hour, he couldn't take it any longer, and he went over to Smith Skinner. He was the mill boss at that time. He told Smith, I've got an awful bad headache." He said, "I just can't stand it. I've got to get home and do something about it." So Smith said, "Well, if it'll help you, why, you better go home then." And so he had to go home and check things out. He found his wife home all right, and I guess she hadn't been anywhere. At least she said she hadn't. Now, was that nice? Well, time marches on, in spite of what we do. And sakes alive, in 35, a little queen came and joined our hive. We named her Marilyn. She's the sweetest little gal. And now, Brother DeLoss had a little sister. We all would cuddle her and make such a fuss over her. She was a sweet little girl. We were very proud of our little family. We were all just as happy as we could be. And Golda was such a lovely little wife and wonderful mother, good cook and a good housekeeper. By this time, we were able to afford a little more luxurious furniture. We were busy working in the ward, and I was busy with my work at the mill, and we were just having lots of fun with our friends and associates, and having such a good time together. We enjoyed Conda so much. It was just such a happy bunch of people in that little community. We were just like one large family. One sorrow was the sorrow of the whole community. One's joys was the joy of the whole community. We certainly enjoyed and appreciated our stay at Conda. And Anaconda Copper was a wonderful company to work for. The time passed swiftly and sweetly by. And it had been a while, you know. But along came 1942. And with that wonderful year, there came another son into our lives. We named him Jerry Charles. He was such a sweet, cuddly little fellow, and DeLoss and Marilyn thought so much of him, and we all loved him very much because he was such a sweet and precious little boy. I had been ward clerk under Bishop William T. Hyde, and then he moved to Utah, and his brother Leonard J. Hyde was made bishop, and I was clerk under Leonard. hide for some time. And then along came 1943, and Leonard and Dorcas, who had been very dear friends of ours, we'd associated with them, thought the world of them, but they decided to move back on the farm down at American Fork, or around American Fork. And so when they left, the ward was getting a little bit hard up for material, and so they made me bishop. And that was a wonderful experience with the help of Golda and other good people there in the ward, and the help of the Lord. I fulfilled my duties there and had a very enjoyable time. Got really acquainted with the Ward family, and it was a wonderful experience, one that any man should appreciate and enjoy and have the privilege of filling. The office of a ward bishop is a wonderful experience and very rewarding, one that you accept and gladly do, but that's a job that you wouldn't take for pay. It's wonderful to have been a bishop. Golda had been Ward Relief Society president under, I think it was, William T. Hyde. And then in the process of raising and caring for family, she was released. There were a few times there in her life when she wasn't very well. She had a few operations, and so she was released as president. And then while I was bishop, she was called back into the Relief Society again. She was a wonderful president and really gave me a lot of support and help. I appreciated her and loved her very much for her work. During my term as bishop, the Soda Springs had grown, and it was decided that they should have a division here in Soda Springs, make two wards. And it was decided that they should have a new chapel. And so in this process, I was instrumental, along with the help of my two counselors, Dewey Skinner and Milford Passy, and the support of all the people of the ward and all the people of Conda, and with the help of our then superintendent of Conda, Tom Russell. He was a member of the church but wasn't active in the church, but he really gave us a lot of support in our move to get a chapel for Conda, because all of these years we'd been meeting in the recreation hall. The company had always been good to us, let us use the hall. We had curtains that we could draw and make a division for classes. And it had all been very nice, but we thought it would be a wonderful thing if we could have a chapel of our very own here in Conda. And so through this superintendent, Tom Russell, the company gave us the ground and gave us a good substantial donation and let us use their tools and their facilities. And so we made a deal with the Soda Springs Ward to move their old chapel from Soda Springs out to Conda, where we remodeled it and made a very fine chapel for us out at Conda. And that made room for the Soda Springs to build a new chapel on the side of the old one. And all the people of Conda were united in this effort, and members and non-members as well pitched in, and we did a wonderful job together in getting a nice chapel for Conda. By this time, my parents had retired and moved back to Provo, their old hometown. And so occasionally Golda and I and our little brood would get in our car and drive to Provo for